to Take It From Us with host Kent Johns. Real people, real voices, real lives. Discussing mental health, addiction, and disability in the community. Your weekly window to the real world. Welcome to Take It From Us.
Junior Tia is the general manager of a new service called Kahurangi that embeds peer support workers into medical and clinical settings to work alongside doctors and psychologists. It is part of the Ember organisation. Junior has worked in the mental health sector for over 20 years and has his own lived experience with addiction. It was a peer who helped him to recover. Here is our chat with Junior Tia. This project, Kahurangi, it sounds really almost revolutionary, or certainly very forward-thinking. Is that the way we would be looking at it?
I think in terms of us growing peer support and having people with lived experience within the clinical team, yes, that's what it is. I think it has these pockets of peer support and clinical services within the other DHBs, but it's quite limited. So the potential is to grow it and spread it as far as we can in terms of clinical services. And I think having that person with that lived experience and that able to contribute from that lens can only be beneficial.
Mm. And what is the duration of the project, and how did it get off the ground?
So this project is a 2-year project that that the Te Whatu Ora commissioned, and it's across 5 districts. So Te Tokotō Mai, which is ADHB, is one of those districts, and there's a couple of other districts across the country, as in Invercargill up north, and a couple of other places. And so there's a total of 28 FTEs spread across these 5 DHB regions, and we managed to have 6 FTEs for our project, which is covers 4 clinical services within ADHB or Te Tokotō Mai, Te Whatu Ora. So that's the start of the project. We're heading up to the halfway mark of the 2-year project. And so, we're tracking well to this point. It's just us growing a lot more as we get into delivering the services.
Yeah, and what are the services that you're delivering?
So there's 4 services. Aranui Ora, which is the maternal mental health service in Green Lane Hospital. So they obviously cover women with mental health challenges. Then you've got Hapai Ora, which is the adolescent and the young adults in Newmarket. We also have got Loto Whale, which is the Pacific mental health service, and they cover the Pacific Islanders within Te Tokotō Mai, and Manawa Nui, which is the Māori mental health service. And again, they're based in Point Chev. So in those services, they've got Loto Whale and Manawa Nui have 2 peer support workers within the service, and Aranui Ora and Ahapai Ora have 1 peer support allocated to their team. So, and they're kind of smaller teams. That's the spread. The guys we've got all 6 people working and kind of just building those relationships within those clinical services.
Yeah. And how would you describe the process of getting people in to be standing shoulder to shoulder with the GPs and the psychologists?
So that's primary healthcare. So we're kind of working with the secondary services in terms of the clinical services. I think part of the embedding was, so we've got a team manager that supports the team, and he kind of coordinates the referrals that the guys get from their clinical services. So they attend all their clinical meetings. So each service has clinical meetings each week where they discuss Whaiora or clients, and then from there, that's how they allocate their clients to each person. The in terms of the caseloads, they vary. It really depends on each service and how they utilise their peer support worker. And then there's also groups that peers are also able to facilitate as well as part of their role as well. So it's really kind of being part of the team and then co-collaborating with their colleagues within the team around how they can work with somebody and kind of add that extra support. The whole purpose around having peers within the services is to enhance what the clinical teams are already doing. So, I mean, these teams have been established for a long time. So what we're bringing is just that a little bit of a different lens, but they're also just to enhance what they're already doing in terms of recovery and their treatment of their fire.
Yeah, and the clinicians, would they acknowledge that this has been a missing piece for a very long time?
Well, we delivered some workshops before the actual project, and that was just to kind of give everybody an oversight about what peer support is, what does it look like, some of the philosophies around it. And I think it was a really good introduction for the clinical teams and an opportunity for them to kind of ask questions if they were unsure of any aspects of peer support. I think it was really important that they understood what this new person that's going to all of a sudden appear into the team and what they can offer. And as part of this project, we've been meeting with the team leads regularly, with the team managers and the service managers on a regular basis, just to kind of make sure that if there's any issues that have arisen, we're able to kind of navigate through that. And a lot of it is just kind of really getting to know each other and getting to understand what it is that the peers support specialist, which is the title that they've got, and what their roles are and what they the scope of their practice as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you've all got different, if everyone there as part of the team has got a different scope of practice, that can only benefit the person needing the help, right?
Yeah, so when you think about it, it's more around giving those different types of lenses. So you've got a multifaceted lenses of experience of a social worker, you've got the psychiatrist, the OT, and now you've got a peer support person who can share those lenses and provide a more comprehensive viewpoint of Whaiora and what maybe banter a few ideas around what they what could work and what could not work. So I think more heads together, more ideas and more scope in terms of that kind of collaboration around what treatment could be like.
Yeah. And how would you describe the success to this point? What have you noticed?
So we're still in early days. We're just starting up evaluation process, which is still pretty much at the midway stage of that. So we've still got a bit of work to do around capturing what we've been doing, how well we've been doing it, and some of the stories, the outcomes from the fire that have had peer support. So it's just, like I think we're still at the early stage, just trying to find our way within the service itself, and it's just building relationships. I think that's the main goal at the moment with the team guys. Some of the guys have been there, from the beginning, have probably had about 11 months now, 10 months, so they're quite embedded, so that's half the team. The other half, a couple of people come in earlier this year, so they're just kind of still in that embedding stage of just getting to know the people around them. But yes, there's, in terms of the progress, we're tracking in the direction that we would like to go to. So there's still room for improvement. There's still for us to kind of work towards getting better understanding of what we're doing and how we're doing it.
I mean, I have to be honest with you, Junior, I was really encouraged to hear about what you're doing and the fact that it feels like people with lived experience and peer support workers are really now valued. Should we feel optimistic that this is going to we're going to see more and more of this type of wraparound support for people who need it right across New Zealand?
That's pretty much the dream, I suppose. I think that's what we're working towards. And I think these are the steps that we're taking to ensure that's the goal, the end goal, is to ensure that people do have an opportunity to access the peer support where available. And again, it's just building those stepping blocks to kind of enhancing that and growing peer support across the country as well. So, like I said, there's four other districts, and we have monthly workshops, monthly meetings where we catch up with each other and kind of share what's been going on, what's been going well, and what's not been going so well. So they just kind of take those, share the learnings that we can all experience as a big group. So there's still a lot of work to be done. I think this is, you know, because it's still new to a lot of these districts, would be the first time that they've ever had them. So it, like with anything new, it takes time to kind of settle in and get to make it as business as usual. So,
and as far as the peer support workers are concerned, their lived experience, does that match up with the job that they're doing now? So if you're working with adolescents, presumably you know what it's like to have a troubled background.
Yep. So each service, like the person with maternal, she's had experience of maternal issues and mental health. So the same as the adolescent services in Loto Whale, obviously that would be a Pacific Islander of that is also kind of within those services, and Manawanui with Māori as well. So we've had to kind of ensure that we hire the right people for the right services, and then that the cultural backgrounds match, and the skill sets and the understanding of, you know, so if you're working, if you're someone that has had postnatal depression, you know, obviously you have a better understanding of how to, you know, maybe support that person, maybe to, you know, walk alongside that person within their journey of recovery. So, yeah, that's definitely been a precursor to ensuring that we match that up and match it appropriately.
And the clients or the consumers, I guess in some cases they might have been referred to as patients, the people who use the services, what are they telling you about what they're learning about themselves from working alongside the peer support team?
Yeah, so I mean, you just use clients and consumers. So terms like that, we now call them whaiora. So we've changed the language we bring in terms of peer, is that recovery types of language, more layman terms, more bantered around, a lot more terms where normal people can understand. So as part of the peer being within the service itself, that they have an influence around what is being said and how people talk about whaiora, and ensuring that human element is not forgotten, which, not to say that it hasn't been, but I think it's just to remind people that there's a person in the team that has also used the services most likely, and to kind of be reminded about that as well. So
yeah, the language is key, isn't it? Because it helps to, I guess, reduce the stigma, and you're wanting people to go and get the help they need. And words like consumers, clients, patients, it's always, I've never really known what to use, because none of them kind of feel right.
Yeah, so I mean, that's evolved over time. So like I said, now we're using terms like tangata whaora, as describing people that are using mental health services. Up at Piri Porno, one of our services out in Silverday, we use the term guests, so that we acknowledge how important they are, and that their experience is not of a patient as such. Like, their experience is coming into a place where they're able to receive some recovery support as well. So I think language is bigger around, especially reducing the stigma, ensuring that we're thinking about how we empower people. A lot of the words can be negative or have negative connotations around it. But yeah, so it's an evolving, it's evolving thing where you're seeing, especially the integration of te reo as well. So you're seeing a lot of that happening, and I think that can only be positive as well within the peer movement.
And for yourself, Junior, peer support, what has it meant to you in your life?
I've been in mental health for now 20 years, and the start of my journey, really, I think it was my first experience with the peer where when I was going through my AOD addiction issues, I went into a rehab where they happened to have a Pacific Islander counsellor who was about the same age as me, who basically had similar experience, knew a couple of the people that I kind of associated myself with. And that connection, when I was at the probably lowest point of my life, was seeing this guy as a counsellor was like, in terms of the hope, was that he was so far along his journey and I was at the beginning of mine. It made it more in terms of like it was possible. It definitely gave me that hope, because he had such a hard upbringing as well. So it was the fact that he was able to make it where he's made it with all the challenges, with all the issues that he's had to face. The growing up in New Zealand in the 70s was a real, it's a very different country back then. And growing up, yeah, just, I mean, I'm born and bred in Auckland, and part of the second migration of Samoans that came over to New Zealand. So all of that, really, I think that was my first experience of in terms of a peer, seeing a person that I could relate to. And when we spoke together, there was just that connection straight away. And a lot of times, you know, I don't know if that was going to be possible with anybody else. I'm not sure, but I still remember that guy and I still see him.
Really?
He's still he's working up in the higher ground, still doing amazing work. And I always think of that person as the person that really changed my direction into being where I am now. So, you know, that was 2004.
Have you found yourself thinking about him and the job he did with you, and reflecting how you go and what you do to help others? I guess has he been a role model for you?
Yeah, so I mean he's quite well known within the AOD sector, and I mean I think people that used to know me back when I was younger, they probably wouldn't even believe what I'm doing now, or that I could even do the stuff that I'm doing now. It's quite a flip-flop in terms of the type of industry I'm in. I never knew I was going to be in mental health and addiction, so I kind of fell into the mental health side by just starting off as a part-time worker. But I think it's one of these industries where you're able to, for me, kind of help my own recovery when I'm helping other people. And it takes you away from yourself. I always think when I'm listening to other people's story, it really puts in perspective my story when I'm going through my own challenges, and know that, you know, there's hope of getting through it. And it just puts my own challenges into perspective, and it keeps me out of my own self. So it's been a journey and a half. It's been up and down, you know, like what life is. But you know, just I've been able to kind of enhance this new chance of life, you know, because you know, this was a second opportunity of doing something that was a bit more, giving back to the community rather than taking from.
Is there anything you'd change?
I've been asked that question, and I don't think I would, because I wouldn't be here if I hadn't gone through all that, everything that I've gone through. So I mean, and I say, it's been really some real tough times, you know. So when the lows have been, you know, extremely low, and you know, I've got my kids, I've got family that, you know, they talk to me, you know, those, all the little things that never had in the past. So I think as weird as this, despite the really bad times, I'm still alive. So
you've probably learned a hell of a lot about yourself in that time.
Yeah, and I think making sure that I've got my family involved, which is probably the people that I've pushed away the most. You know, so I think the only regret is that my parents have both passed away about 13 years ago, so they haven't seen enough of me where I'm at now. So you know, so that's probably the one thing that I probably regret the most, and even though I was a real pain in the ass to them while I was growing up. But yeah, that's, you kind of reflect on what you could have done better, having been a better son or something like that. So
yeah, I often wonder too, would the young me really have listened to what the old me would be telling him? Do you ever have that conversation with yourself and wonder?
Yeah, so one of the things I get to do sometimes is to go and I go and talk to the mental health, the wellbeing classes that are level fours at Unitech. Sometimes I've gone to a few colleges and presented about drug addiction. And so I really enjoy doing that, because I see all these young people faces at the beginning of their lives, and just really trying to get them to kind of, you know, understand, you know, how precious, you know, how lucky they are to be at the start of their lives, where and then really trying to, when I share my story with them, is to kind of, hopefully they don't take that, you know, the direction that I took. I always end with talking to especially the Pacifica Māori kids around trying to stay away from the gang lifestyles, you know, and trying to, yeah, just, and I get asked the question, you know, what's the one thing you wish you would have done when you were younger? And I should have listened to my parents. And so that's something these guys want to hear, you know. So they kind of all look as if, you know, like you said, when you're younger, you don't listen to nobody. You always think you know everything. And now I'm at a stage where I realize my parents actually knew some stuff. And that's the one that always gets everybody. So I always go, like, I probably should have listened to my parents. So
there's a phrase that makes me laugh, Junior, and I think it's along the lines of, young people think old people are stupid. Old people know that young people are stupid.
Pretty much. Well, that's hard for you. Yes. I mean, you don't understand what we're at.
Yeah. You know that you don't take that literally, but when we're older, we can look back and go, oh, I used to be in your position, and I've learned a few things as I've gone on, right?
Yeah. As we get on, we hopefully get wiser.
Yeah.
I think, we're still learning.
Yeah, well, that's what life is, really, isn't it? It's a never-ending journey, and you don't stop learning. And the people that think they know everything, and the people that stop learning, what a shame, because if you think you know everything, you wouldn't be open to learning in the first place.
Yeah, that's a pitfall. So I think it's really important to ensure that, like, to have that mindset that you don't know everything. And I think, in this type line of work, that's really important, to have that understanding that you don't know everybody. You always go into, you know, as much as what works for one person doesn't work for another, always have that mindset around that everyone is different, everyone is unique. But you just learn so much from meeting so many different people. I really enjoy, you know, just meeting people with different cultures and embracing that, the value of what that is for each person. So it's pretty good.
So you're able to lower your judgment when you and be curious when you're talking to people?
Well, you, that's the goal, you know. So I don't know. I don't think I don't know if I ever get it right or perfect, but you know, you always kind of have to check yourself. And as a peer, I think that's one of the main values of peer is for me is around that humility, trying to stay and that's something that was embedded in me in terms of being Pacific Islander. We always talk about service. We always talk about serving our elders. I've always found that really challenging sometimes when in the workplace, because when I'm working with older people, it's always, you kind of automatically have that respect straight away, you know. So it's one of those things you just navigate as you kind of through the workplace.
Yeah, and look, I think we often look at the experts like psychologists, psychiatrists, doctors. We think of them as experts, and they have some wonderful expertise in their field. But if you bring it right back, we are the experts of our own lives. You're the expert of your life. I'm the expert of my life. And are you able to empower people to think that? Hey, you might have greater power and control over your own decisions and where you're going than you might otherwise think.
So we've got peer employment training. So we have a training for peers that that helps whoever goes. So when they attend this training, it's a 6-week training, 12 days. And part of their training is to enhance that person's belief around the value of their lived experience and how they can utilize that to benefit or to work within the peer space. And I always kind of talk when I talk to the class, it's always around that their lived experience is their superpower. It's the one thing that's unique to them, and if they utilize it in the way that they're able to support somebody else, and then that's great. It's just understanding the principles and values of how you can do that. And everyone is unique, everyone is special in that sense, and everyone has a story, you know. So their stories have similarities in terms of challenges and different types of challenges, but it's always, when you're in that class, you're there for a reason, you know, like your journey of recovery or what the journey of your life journey has put you into that class. And so it's meant to be, and you've got an opportunity to utilize your learnings from the class and then take it into the workplace and support other people who are going through their own challenges.
What would you ultimately love to see become of the Kahurangi program?
So, I mean, I think as we move into, the end game for me is just having peer support specialists within all the clinical services. So having one or two, we found actually having two was more beneficial, because it just helped the peers support each other. But having that lived experience on the different levels and having that understanding where they're able to share their lens and be part of a team, and yeah, I think that's pretty much what we're kind of working towards. You know, so yeah.
You're getting there.
We're getting there. Yeah, so like I said, we're in the first year. We're just coming up to the first year, and we'll do an evaluation of the services of Kahurangi, and we'll keep moving forward.
Yeah. What, just before we finish up, what would you like to see if you were able to make a change or to see something happen when it comes to the mental well-being of all of us, the Whai Ora of New Zealand? What would it be?
I know. I suppose just self-awareness.
Right.
Having self-awareness of what wellness looks to each person, pretty much having that recovery plan, a recovery wellness plan, and I think, you know, getting healthier, that, you know, and integrating physical well-being into your daily routines. You know, the whole thing around eating better and having a healthier lifestyle. You know, we live in such a different period of human beings, of things being accessible, you know, in terms of fast foods and so forth. So we don't look after ourselves well enough. So it's just more around getting back to the basics. You know, we've got a pandemic in terms of weight, you know, and that's across the whole spectrum of humankind, really. But I think going back to the basics and looking after yourself.
You and I are on the same page. It's such a powerful tool, isn't it, that lifestyle, making good, healthy lifestyle choices, still very much underrated and, underappreciated as to how powerful looking after ourselves actually is.
It's transformable. So you can change your life, and depending on, and doing simple things, I think, you know, we've become such an active society now. You know, with cars around, we don't move around. We don't exercise enough. You know, so
modernity, for all its great things and our easy access to communicate and technology and everything so fast and at the touch of a button, it does have a lot to answer for, though, too, doesn't it? I mean, with the basics that you talk about, eating well, getting good sleep, moving, we've completely lost touch with that as a society.
Yeah. So, and you know, like anything, it's just implementing it into a lifestyle, you know, so that it becomes your normal routine. I was just talking to someone around the oldest people. I think we're living in Japan. There's this village in Japan where the average age is over 100, and the reason that they grow so old, they don't only grow old, but they're still active.
Yeah,
and it's because they don't have any non-processed food, and they eat off the land, and they live a simple life, and they're always exercising in terms of being moving around. So that's as simple as that is. These guys are living over 100 plus years and still active as you know, yeah, wheelchairs or anything. So
You're talking about the people on the island of Okinawa, who that's considered one of the blue zones, and part of it too is that family connection. So they're not sent off to a rest home or a retirement village or whatever it might be. They're actually still part of the family, and they help rear the young children, the mokopuna, coming through, which is brilliant and just completely probably different to certainly Western society in New Zealand.
So they've got that emotional connection as well. So it's a real holistic approach of just all over well-being. You know, so I mean, it's simple but effective. We probably go for the fast for all stuff, but that's always has short comings to that as well. So that's not always going to be beneficial. So
yeah, Junior, really appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us on Take It From Us, and all the very best with the program.
Take It From Us is produced by Karen Murphy. Our sound engineer is Paul Hannon from Planet FM, and I'm your host, Kent Johns. Please get in touch with us on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you.
You're listening to Take It From Us. My story, your story, our story.
find out.